We are just so thankful everyone is here this morning. Thankful that we all made it out in the rain. And I know that a lot of our own members are out of town, but we also have a lot of visitors in town. A lot of people are traveling. We're just so thankful everyone can be here this morning. We can worship God together. If you are traveling today or tomorrow, just be safe. And we're thankful that you can make it out here with us today. Some of you have noticed we started on Wednesday night, but also you've noticed today the new projector is up and running. So many people have said they can actually see the songs we're singing, and I've had a few people say that I need to go back and preach every sermon I've preached to this point so they can actually see my PowerPoint. I don't know about that. That gives me about a year and a half's worth of extra sermons, so that's a possibility. We're just thankful for Jared and all the people that have put so much time and effort into this. Just to give you all a heads up, like Collier said, there used to be a little screen right here where I could read everything that you all were seeing, and I put a lot of verses up on the screen. And so I have my own little screen here, but the problem is it's not connected to anything except my finger. And so I'm going to click this screen and swipe this screen. And so if I seem a little off or I'm looking back to make sure, that's just what we have to do. And so, but that's okay. And we're just, again, so thankful that we are all here. This past week, obviously, has been a week of Thanksgiving. And we have spent the last several days with friends and family, and we have focused on all the wonderful things God has given us. And last week in my sermon, we looked at just what it means to be thankful and just very basic things that we have to be thankful for. One thing I'm thankful for is compassion. We're going to look at that topic this morning, but as we study what biblical compassion really looks like, it's far and above anything that you and I could probably ever comprehend. Because when you look at the compassion that Jesus had, as we'll look in a few cases here this morning, it's something that we don't deserve. But when you look at the compassion that God had, like how he loved this world so much that he gave his only begotten Son, and the compassion he had to send that Son so that you and I can be healed of our eternal consequences, it's something that is just beyond words and beyond comprehension, and something that we all should be thankful for. But not only what is compassion and what that looks like, this morning we're going to look at how to put that compassion in action and why you and I should have compassion on everyone we come in contact with. Now, this is kind of a debated topic today because there's so many things in the world that we say we should turn away from, or so many people that we should shun or turn away from. But as we focus on compassion today, I want us to just keep a few things in mind. On the biblical compassion, the godly compassion that not only God had for us, but what kind of compassion we should show to other people and who we should show it to. And to start this morning, I want to read the parable of the unforgiving servant in Matthew chapter 18. We're going to start reading in verse 21. We're going to read the whole parable, and it starts with a question from Peter that many of us are familiar with, and we'll make some points here at the end of the story. In Matthew chapter 18, verse 21, it says, "Then Peter came to him and said, 'Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? Up to seven times.' Jesus said, 'I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. But as he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and the payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, 'Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all.' Then the master of the servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him of the debt. But that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, 'Pay me what you owe.' So his fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you all.' And he would not, but went and threw him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what he had done, they were very grieved and came and told their master all that he had done. Then his master, after he had called him, said to him, 'You wicked servant, I forgave you all the debt because you begged me. Should you not also have compassion on your fellow servant, just as I had pity on you?' And his master was angry and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him. So my heavenly Father also will do to you, if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brother his trespasses." Probably a familiar story to many of us, where this one servant was in so much debt that when his master came to collect the debt, all he could do was fall down and start begging that his master had pity on him, had compassion, have patience, he said, with me. And the master was getting ready to sell him and his wife and his children as slaves, had to make that profit back somehow. And so he was about ready to sell his servant and his family to make a little bit more money. Probably not nearly, as we'll look at in just a minute, not nearly enough to pay the 10,000 talents that this man owed. But this master had compassion on his servant. And he just forgave the debt completely. But then this person, that the servant that owed so much, 10,000 talents, he then went and found somebody that owed him money. And in fact, it was 100 denarii, which was much, 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 much cheaper. In fact, let's look at this just for a moment here. When you look at the parable of the talents, this man owed 10,000 talents. Now, there's a little bit of math. I always said I didn't get into preaching to do math, but here's just a little bit of math, and I kind of have to do math because this, I think, will kind of bring this all home. Here, one denarius in that day and age was a day's wage. If you worked a full day, which was 6 a.m. to about 6 p.m., 12 whole hours, you walked home with one denarius. That was one day's work. Now, 600 denarii equaled one talent. Now, if you had 10,000 talents, that equals 6 million denarii. That is 6 million days of work. You put that into perspective, it would have taken 16,438 years of work to pay off that man's 10,000 talent debt. That is a lot of work. And so when this man fell on his hands and knees in front of his master and he said, "Forgive me, have pity on me, have patience with me." One, his master knew this debt was unpayable. But he was willing to forgive it. He was willing to forgive 16,000 years worth of work. But as the servant was forgiven, he went his way and he found someone that owed him 100 denarii. Now look back at that screen. One denarius equals one day of work. So 100 denarii, 3.5 months, give or take, of work. This man was just forgiven 16,000 years of work or of wages, but yet he could not forgive 3.5 months of what was owed to him. And in fact, he was so angry about it, the text says he took the one that owed him 100 denarii by the throat, and he says, "You pay me what you owe me." And when he couldn't pay, he threw him into prison until he could pay the debt that was owed him. Now, how much money are you making while you're in prison? You don't. And so this man obviously didn't have compassion on this person who owed him 100 denarii, even though he was showed compassion before. And so as the servants start hearing what was going on, it says that they had become grieved. When they told their master what had been done, the master became furious. He says, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant, just as I had pity on you?" Just a simple question. But sometimes the answer is so hard. When the master showed his anger, he delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him. Now, there are many different lessons we can learn from this. But we're going to focus on this word compassion. Because it says in Matthew 18, verse 27, "Then the master of the servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him his debt." I often wonder, what moved this person so much to where he was willing to forgive over 16,000 years worth of debt? And the answer is compassion. And we see this word all over the Bible. We see this all over the New Testament. You look at verses like this in the book of Matthew as well, in chapter 14, with Jesus. It says, when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, And he was moved with compassion for them. And he healed their sick. Or what about this verse also in Matthew chapter 20? It says, so Jesus had compassion and he touched their eyes. And this verse in Mark chapter 6 and verse 34, it says, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them. So he began teaching them many things. Or this verse in Mark chapter 8 and verse 2, I have compassion on the multitude because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. I mean, you look at Jesus' ministry, and time again, this word compassion comes up. He had compassion on the sick, and so he gave them health. He had compassion on the people that were following him, and so he began to teach them and give them guidance. He had compassion on the hungry, and so he gave them what they needed. They gave them nourishment. We also see this word in the story of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10 and verse 33. It says, as a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, he saw him and had compassion. As we know that story goes, the Samaritan had compassion on this man to where he gave him money. He gave him food, he gave him water, he poured oil on his bandages or on his wounds and bandaged him up, put him on his own donkey and took him to the inn, said, if this man requires anything else, just put it on my tab, I'll come back and I'll pay it later. And time again, you see this idea of compassion come up in the New Testament and really in all of Scriptures. What is compassion? When you look at just the basic definition of what compassion is, it says having sympathy and concerns for the sufferings and misfortunes of others. So let's say you're sitting at home at night, and you're watching infomercials, and on comes a commercial, and you see these sad little puppy dogs, and there's some nice music playing in the background, and these dogs have the saddest eyes, and they're just looking at you saying, please come take me home, and you start feeling a little something in your heart. You start feeling compassion. Oh, maybe I should call. Maybe I should do something. Maybe I would love to get a dog. Or another dog, right? And you have compassion because you see that they look sad. They look helpless. They need help. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever called, because that's about where compassion stops with most of us. We feel compassion, but very rarely do we do anything about it. What I want to show us this morning is biblical compassion. It's much different. Biblical compassion requires action on those feelings. And that's what we see Jesus do throughout his ministry. And that's what we saw the Good Samaritan do. We saw them not only have feelings over someone's sufferings and misfortunes, but we saw them act on those out of sympathy and concern. I want you to think for just a moment. If you have passion for something, that's the root word there in compassion. If you have a passion for something, you get fired up, you get zealous, your passion overtakes you and it becomes who you are, becomes what you do. And that's exactly what we saw in each one of those examples that we looked at on the previous screens. Where Jesus saw the misfortunes of others. He saw the sick. He saw the people that were weary after following him. He saw the hungry. He saw the needy. And he was moved to do something about it. The Good Samaritan saw someone that needed help and he felt sorry for him. So he was moved to do something about it. And Jesus says at the end of the story of the Good Samaritan, he says, go and do likewise. That's what he wanted the people to understand from the story of the Good Samaritan, for us to go and do likewise. That's what we see the Master do in Matthew 18. He not only had compassion. No, it would have been one thing if he felt sorry for the servant who had over 16,000 years worth of work. He could feel sorry for him. But he didn't have to forgive him. But he showed forgiveness. And you can almost hear Jesus saying, now go and do likewise. But that servant didn't. That servant wasn't willing to show the same compassion, the same pity on other people as well. Compassion should move us to action. But here's what I'm afraid has happened. I'm afraid we have become numb to the hurt of others. I'm afraid we look out at the world and we see other people hurting. And it just kind of becomes nothing to us anymore. We see the nightly news. We hear about murderers. We hear about poverty. We hear about wars going on. We hear about terrorist attacks. We hear about all these things. And sometimes it takes something so big for us to kind of snap out of our senses and feel something for somebody. But so often we turn on the news and it's like, oh, there's someone else is dead. Someone else's house caught on fire. Oh, well, someone else did this, and someone else did this. And it's just become so normal in our society to see bad things happening to people that we become numb to the people hurting around us. And sometimes that's true even when we come into this church building, where we become so engulfed with just getting here. And I'll admit, sometimes as a parent of two young ones, and for the parents that are here today, sometimes it's just a victory getting out the door with the proper clothes on, with everybody in the car, and getting in this building. And sometimes we get so wrapped up in what's going on in our own minds that we forget to look out to other people. We forget to see that other people may be hurting, maybe more than we are. And other people are going through things that maybe we can't even imagine. I think about the story of David. The story of David, when he's on the run from King Saul, he had nobody that cared about him. He would oftentimes sit alone in a cold, dark cave on the run from King Saul. And I want to put some of these verses, this verse on the screen. And I want you to think about what David was feeling. In Psalm 142, verse 4, as David penned these words, he said, "Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul." I wonder how often people feel like that. I wonder how often we feel like that in our everyday life, where it feels like no one can acknowledge me. It feels like refuge has failed me. Maybe people come to church for refuge. Maybe people, they find refuge in so many different things, but they just, it's failed them. No one cares for them. A lot of people feel like that these days. These are sad, sad words that people still mumble and feel today. And we need to remember that maybe even though we aren't close with people, or even though we don't know people out on the street that might be feeling these words, we don't know the homeless man asking for food, we don't know people's situations, they're still God's children. And God put them here on this earth, and God wants them to be with Him one day. You know, there are so many people in our society that care about endangered species, that care about rainforests and the ozone layer and cruelty to animals and all these things. And those are all good things to care for and to fight for. And I'm not taking anything away from those. But very little emphasis gets put on the lost souls of the world. Very little emphasis gets put into what can we do to reach the lost of this world. And we should be conscious about these things, because a lost soul is far more important than anything else in this world. And God cares for each one of His children, and so should we. And He's given us compassion and care, and so we need to give that compassion and care to others. Then when we look out at this world, and we see a world that's full of lost individuals, God has compassion on them. But very rarely do we show compassion, the compassion they deserve, or the compassion that we have been shown, just like the servant here in Matthew chapter 8. So here's a question. Well, why should we care? Why should we care? One reason why, it's one of the greatest works. I want you to consider, Christ gives the great commission in the book of Matthew. He tells us to go out and to teach the nations, baptizing them. This is our mission. This is our job as Christians, to go out into the world, to care for people enough to want to teach them the gospel of Christ. And God brings us in so He can send us out and go help others in return. Look at what James says in James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. It says, "Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins." Now, out of all the causes that we have in the world today, out of all the good things to fight for and to show compassion, or all the people that we can show compassion to, what is more important, according to James, than turning a sinner, turning a wanderer back to Christ? or returning a lost soul back to God. James says that when we do that, we can know that we have turned a sinner from error. We will know that we have saved a soul from death. We've covered a multitude. We've helped that person. This is one of the greatest works we can do, to have compassion on the people around us, trying to save their soul, trying to help them come to Jesus, come to know Jesus. Christ would say in Luke chapter 19, verse 10, that He came to seek and save that which is lost. That's why He came. That was His mission. And so when teaching people, we need to think of the compassion that Christ had for them. And are we showing them the same compassion that God showed us? There's a phrase that we often use, and it goes something like this: people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And we often say that in this context, we use this phrase to say we just can't jam stuff down people's throat, right? We can't just take somebody and start bashing them and teaching them everything they need to know without first letting them know that we care about them. And that's kind of the point that us preachers always make. Just don't jam stuff down people's throat. Just don't bonk them over the head with the Bible. Don't Bible bash them. They have to know how much you care. And we rarely focus on that last part. Do they know how much we care? Do they even know why we care? Do we even care at all, or do we just care about someone getting wet in this water back here? To me, when I think about compassion, when I think about the compassion God had on us, the compassion we need to have on other people, we look at the soul. We look at the long-term effects of the soul not having Jesus Christ. We look at how they need Jesus because we were once in their shoes needing Jesus as well. Jesus had compassion on everyone He came in contact with. He tried to help them understand who He was and what His mission was. And so should we. And it's one of the greatest works we can do, to try to teach the gospel and bring other people to the flock of God. Another reason why we should care is it gives us a feeling of fulfillment. I want you to think of a couple of these stories here for just a moment. Right before this story, in Matthew chapter 18 and verse 21, if you go back to verse 10, there's a story of the lost sheep. And Christ is telling them that if a brother or a sheep wanders away and leaves the 99, do we not go and try to find that lost sheep? Now, there are other places in Scripture, specifically in the book of Luke, that Luke brings up the same story, but along with a couple other stories. And he brings up the story of the lost sheep. And he says, if a sheep wanders away, and we go and we find it, and we bring it back, he says, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep, which was lost. There's a sense of fulfillment. We found what was lost, and so there needs to be rejoicing about that. He brings up a lady who lost her coin, and when she finds her coin, she says, rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which I lost. And then he brings up the story of the prodigal son. And when the son comes back home, it says, make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again. There's a sense of fulfillment when the lost is found. And what joy it should be to us when we look out on the world and we not only have compassion, but we act on that compassion, knowing that we are trying to bring people to Christ. There is reason to rejoice, and that is okay. That not in a self-fulfilling way to say, look what I have done. I'm such a good teacher. Look how many people I baptized. I know people, and I know preachers. They keep a list after list after list. Look how many people I baptized. And I say, it doesn't matter. What matters is we're just simply teaching the gospel because we care about those people enough to get them to heaven, just like God cares for us. And when we baptize someone, we should rejoice in the work we've done, because we've shown compassion just as God has shown compassion. Most of all, God has shown compassion to them as well, because God does the saving, not us. But it should give us a sense of fulfillment, because we can rejoice that the lost has been found. We care for other people because it helps us be more like Jesus. We've already looked at so many different examples of what Jesus had done in His ministry on showing compassion for other people, but our Lord just cared so much for those people around Him. And how can we be Christ-like if we're not caring like He cared? He cared for little children. He cared for the poor. He cared for the weak, the aged, the sick, the dying, the lost. He even cared for people he didn't even know. He cared for foreigners. He cared for people that hated him. He cared for people that loved him. Jesus just cared. He had compassion on anybody and everybody he came in contact with. And so, I know there are many things that he did we cannot do. I will never be able to walk on water. I'll never be able to turn water into wine. I'll never be able to look at somebody and say, you need that fixed? You need that arm fixed? It's fixed. It's done. And it just be done miraculously. There's a lot of things Jesus did that we cannot do. But there is one thing, and that is we can love the people in this world so much. We can show compassion on them just as he did. He said, not even a cup of cold water will go unnoticed by our Father in heaven, in Matthew 10, verse 42. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21 says this. It says, for this you are called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Christ suffered for us, leaving us an example we should follow in his steps, to also be there for other people. And maybe, just maybe, suffer for other people as well. Another reason we should care for other people and show compassion on other people, because someone cared for us. Someone has cared for us at some point. I want you to think about why you're here this morning. Why are you here this morning? Why do you believe in Jesus? Why have you obeyed the gospel? The short answer is because someone cared enough for you, someone cared enough for me to take the time out of their day, out of their life, to teach me the fundamental principles of what it means to be a Christian. They cared enough about our soul to teach us about what it means to be saved, about how to be saved, so that we can spend eternity in heaven with them. For many of us, that was our parents. You might say, well, that's easy. They're your parents. Of course they want you to be in heaven. Yeah? But there are many parents that don't teach their kids about the gospel. There are many Christian parents that might not teach their kids about the gospel. Maybe it was a friend. Maybe it was a coworker. Maybe it was a boyfriend or a girlfriend that you're no longer with. Maybe it was a grandparent. Maybe it was a friend at school. I don't know. But someone cared enough about you to teach you the gospel. So many times we feel lonely and we feel like the world's turned its back on us, but that doesn't mean we stop caring for God's people. And that doesn't mean that God has stopped caring for us. Look at Psalm 142 and verse 7. It says there, bring my soul out of prison that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me. That was a continuation of the psalm we read earlier. From David. Although David felt so lonely, he knew that God was still in control. He knew that God's righteousness would surround him and that God would still deal bountifully with him. We are God's chosen. We are here because not only has someone cared enough to teach us the fundamental principles of what it means to be a Christian, to teach us about the Bible, but we are here because God cared for us as well. And I hope that there does not come a day where any of us will hear from our Master who forgave us a sin that could not be forgiven without the blood of His Son. I hope that we never get to hear from Him, you wicked servant. How could you not also forgive other people? We care because not only has someone cared for us, but God has cared for us. And so what we need to do as we close this morning, so we need to learn to put our compassion into action. We need to learn to not only have compassion and look out at this world and feel sorry for this world, but what are we going to do about it? To me, this is one of the fundamental principles of why the church seems to be dying in our nation. Because there are a lot of people who sit around and feel sorry or feel like things should be done or feel compassion on the world, but there are very few people who are willing to go out and show the compassion, to teach the principles of Jesus Christ, to live the principles of Christ. There are so few people that love the people of this world, but not when it comes to doing something for them because I might get burnt or hurt or whatever the situation is. And to me, this is one of the fundamental principles why the church seems to be dying in this world. Because too many people are not putting their compassion into action. And so in the Bible, we see things like this. We see people sharing with those who have not. We see people sharing with people that don't have anything. We look at the church in Acts in chapter 4, and we're not going to read these verses. You can read these on your own time. But in chapter 4, verses 34 through 37, we see them going to sell everything. We see them, there were so many people in Jerusalem that weren't going back home because they were being taught the gospel. They wanted to stay. They wanted to be a part of this movement, a part of this church that was being established. There were so many people in need that people were selling their land. People were selling their property. They were sharing clothes. They were sharing food. There were people that were in need. And the Christians were willing to step up and do something about it. Why was the church so successful in the New Testament? It's because the Christians cared for each other enough and loved each other enough to take care of one another. To not just say, wow, this new thing, Christianity, or this guy Christ, he sounds like a pretty cool guy. I think I'll follow him. I think they genuinely understood the love Christ had for them, and so they were willing to show it to the people, some people they probably didn't even know. They were willing to show it to people who were maybe barging in to their city, Jerusalem. Maybe they were unwanted guests, unwanted visitors to the city of Jerusalem because they were all there for the day of Pentecost. But yet they were willing to sell their land, their property, and give it to the church or give it to the people that needed it. I mean, have you ever thought about that? How many of us, if someone came to church this morning and said, I need a place to stay. I'm here in Athens. We just moved here. We have nowhere to go. How many of your first thoughts would be, you know what? Let me sell my house and I'm going to give you some of the money I make from this. You can go put a nice little down payment on your own house and I'll keep some for me because I also need somewhere to live. But here, take several thousand. Go put a down payment. You need to get on your feet. That wouldn't be my first thought. And I highly doubt it would be any of yours either. How many of you, if someone walked in that was starving, that was hungry, said, I need help. How many of you would say, you know what, I've got some clothes that might be too snug or too small or whatever. Why don't you come to my house? I'll give you some clothes. I don't think that would be my first thought. But that's what we saw the church doing. They said, what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine, kind of attitude. And they were genuinely concerned for each other. They were helping the poor and the needy. Matthew chapter 25, verses 34 through 40. If you want to turn over there, we'll read just a few of those verses. 25, verses 34 through 30. Jesus is talking about how these people that fed the hungry and gave him food and they gave him thirsty or he was thirsty and they gave him drink and he was a stranger, he took me in, and they said, when did we do this? He said, I say to you in verse 40, as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. That we have an obligation to show compassion on this world. But not just the physical things. And that's something that I think we need to understand too. We share more than just physical things. Look at all these things that we could share. We could share things like knowledge and talents. And we could share things like passion. We can share things like our strengths. We can share our love. We can share our example. There's so many different things that we could share that could help teach people about Christ, that can help people see what we stand for, see our love, and see our compassion. But most of all, what we could do is we could teach people the gospel. There are more and more people that just need to simply hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. And sometimes we're the only ones that can give it to them. We may be the only person that will ever be willing to teach them the gospel because we've had compassion on them. How many times have you seen, and I'm just as guilty of this, but you see people maybe studying the Bible or reading the Bible or something like in a restaurant or in a coffee shop or whatever it is, and you start wondering to yourself, wonder what they're reading. Wonder where they go to church. Probably not where I go to church. Or my kind of church, right, is what we kind of say. Probably not my kind of church. They probably go to one of these other churches. How many of you have ever had compassion enough to say, you know what, I want to make sure they understand truth. I'm going to go over and just ask them what they're studying. I'm going to go over and just ask them, hey, what are you reading? Would you want to have a study sometime? Would you want to get together and read that more? That's hard. That's hard to just have enough love for somebody where we're willing to just go up to them and ask them if they want to learn more about the gospel. But Philip did it. Philip was sent by the Holy Spirit to go teach the eunuch. And all he did was walk up and he said, do you understand what you're reading? And from there, someone was baptized. We can encourage other people. I think simply that's something that we just need more of today. That one way we show compassion is to just encourage other people. And when we walk in this church building, so many times, like I said towards the beginning, we just don't know what people are going through. We don't know what people are feeling. And sometimes people just need encouragement. Sometimes people just need hey, how you doing? How are you feeling today? Is there anything I can do for you this week? Is there anything you need? Sometimes people just need a card or a phone call. Sometimes people just need to know that there's somebody out there that cares about them enough to ask them how they're doing. And when people see the compassion and the care that we have for each other, it encourages them. Look at what Matthew chapter 5 says in verse 16. Let your light so shine before men they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. When we can encourage other people, and when we can be that light in the world, when we can show Christ's light in this world, we can encourage them to follow that example and to glorify their Father in heaven. And we've talked about a lot of different things this morning, and I understand that. There's a lot that could be said on compassion. There's a lot more I probably could say. But I want to leave us with just, I think, two main things I want us to take from this lesson today. When we're talking about compassion, when we're talking about what it means to show biblical compassion, don't close your eyes. Don't do what the Good Samaritan did and pass by on the other side of the road, or what the priest and the Levite did in the story of the Good Samaritan and pass by on the other side of the road. Don't pretend like people don't need help. If there's someone in this church that needs help or is suffering or hurting, don't pretend like someone else is going to take care of it. Because we're a family. We don't close our eyes. We need to open them and show compassion on those who need compassion. There's a lot of different things we can do for other people. But there's nothing greater than to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. There's nothing greater than to share the gospel. Sometimes people just simply need to be taught Jesus. And the greatest thing that we can give, the greatest gift we can give somebody, is the gift of Jesus. You know, we're coming up into a holiday season where there's going to be so many gifts being given, and there's going to be a lot of things that probably you want, maybe some things you don't want. Some things that I think it's so interesting because there are many things that if we don't want them, all we have to do is just get back in the store and or get back in the car, go to the store, and we can return it. There's some things that we're going to love, and there's some things that as we get this holiday season, you may get a gift that you're going to cherish forever. But as we talked about in the book of Ecclesiastes, the things of this world will be gone one day. The best gift you've ever gotten will disappear one day. Maybe that's your kids. But you know what? Kids pass away. Maybe you'll be here to see it. Maybe you won't. But they'll be gone one day. Parents pass away. Grandparents pass away. People die. Physical gifts that we get, cars, houses, all these Christmas gifts that people are fighting for and all these places you see on TV, guess what? One day, they'll all be destroyed. And the greatest gift we can give somebody is something that cannot be touched with human hands, and that is the gift of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And if we do nothing else in this life, if we have compassion on someone, the best thing we can do is to introduce them to this book or ask them if they understand what they're reading. Ask them, do you really understand Jesus? Do you want to know more about Him? Whatever the questions are, there is nothing greater than this gift right here. And there is nothing greater than God's compassion for us to be willing to give us eternal salvation. That story, it kind of boggles my mind that 16,000 years worth of daily wages was owed to the master. A price that could not be paid. And yet when you and I sin, that's exactly what happens. When we sin against God, we can never repay that price. But yet God still forgave us. God had compassion. He had love. He had mercy. He has grace. However we want to put it, He still forgave us of our sins. But yet so many times we find ourselves like that wicked servant, so unwilling to forgive, so unwilling to share the compassion and show the compassion that was given to us. I want us to think about these things this week. Just think about how we treat other people. Think about how we forgive other people. Think about this is a family kind of time of the year. Think about family. So many families fight, so many families argue. But God forgave His family. He wants to spend eternity with them. Can you say the same thing? If you're here this morning and you need to be buried in the waters of baptism, you want to see God's compassion, you want to see God's forgiveness firsthand, it starts with being buried in those waters, dying with Christ, raising up in newness of life. And at that moment, I think you will feel God's love and God's compassion. And then you can go out and start showing it to other people. If you need anything done this morning, come forward as we stand and as we sing.